Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada. Nita Gora Haribo, 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 Nita Gora Haribo. Gora Premanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Please say together with me. Narayana namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayamudirayat nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. Hi, so welcome everyone to this morning's Srimad Bhagavatam class. My great pleasure to be here with all of you today. So we're reading from Canto 3, Chapter 23, Devahuti's Lamentation. She's not lamenting yet. She's going to lament at the end. and we're doing text 38. So... Tasmin alupta mahima priyaya anurakto. Vidya daribir upachirna vapur vimane. Babraja utkacha kamud ganavan apichyas. Tara bir avrita ivo dupatir nabasta. Tasmin alupta mahima priyaya anurakto. Vidya dhari bir upachirna vapur vimane. Babraja utkacha kamud ganavan apichyas. Tarabir avrita ivo dupatir nabhastaha. Please chant. Tasmin alupta mahima piyaya nirakta. Tasmin alupta mahima piyaya nirakto. Vidyadaribhi vapu vimane. Pabraja utkacha kamudgana van. Let's do the word for word. Tasmin, in that, alupta, not lost, mahima, glory, priyaya, with his beloved consort, anurakta, attached, vidyadaribhi, by the Gandharva girls, upachirna, waited upon. Vapu, his person. Vimane, on the airplane. Babraja, he shone. Utkacha, open. Kamut Ganavan, the moon which is followed by rows of lilies. Apichya, very charming. Tarabhi, by stars, avrita, surrounded, eva, as, udupati, the moon, the chief of the stars, nabasta, in the sky. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Though seemingly attached to his beloved consort while served by the Gandharva girls, the sage did not lose his glory, which was mastery over his self. In the aerial mansion, Kardama Muni with his consort shone as charmingly as the moon in the midst of the stars in the sky, which causes rows of lilies to open in ponds at night. Very beautiful verse. So please repeat after me. Though seemingly attached to his beloved consort, while served by the Gandharva girls, The sage did not lose his glory, which was mastery over his self. In the aerial mansion, Kardama Muni with his consort shone as charmingly as the moon in the midst of the stars in the sky, which causes rows of lilies to open in ponds at night. Purport. The mansion was in the sky, and therefore the comparison to the full moon and stars is very beautifully composed in this verse. Kardama Muni looked like the full moon, and the girls who surrounded his wife Devahuti seemed just like the stars. On a full moon night, the stars and the moon together form a beautiful constellation. Similarly, in that aerial mansion in the sky, Kardama Muni with his beautiful wife and the damsels surrounding them appeared like the moon and stars on a full moon night. Jai. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militan Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishvari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanivyo Vaishnavivyo Namo Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachadeshatarane Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai. So we have a very beautiful poetic verse here describing Kardama Muni and Devahuti as they stand in the aerial mansion in the sky surrounded by the maidservants, the same maidservants that just dressed and decorated Devahuti very beautifully in the underwater in the Bindus River lake. So when Devahuti came out, they came out with her, and now they're surrounding her in that aerial mansion, and they look like the full moon surrounded by stars. So an interesting thing that I found in this verse is that Srila Prabhupada says, though seemingly attached to his beloved consort, the Sanskrit is priyaya anurakta. So anurakta means attached. Rakta means attached, and anu means constantly attached, always attached, ongoingly attached to his priya, priyaya. Right? Priya means his beloved, his dear wife, Devahuti. So though seemingly attached to his beloved consort, he is alupta mahima. In other words, he didn't lose his glory. He didn't lose his Krishna consciousness. So this is something very important, that even though we may be attached to someone, right, like in a grihastha ashram relationship, in a family relationship, even in a friendship relationship, but generally we consider, we hear all these things about family life, how it's a dark well, how it's a whatever, you know, devotees say it is. You've heard all those things. But it's possible to be like Kardama Muni, that although you're very attached to your partner, to your family members, but we don't have to lose our glory. We don't have to lose our Krishna consciousness. And so because it's not necessarily that we are going to be degraded by attachment. Right? There are forms of attachment that are actually uplifting, that are enlightening. Right? It says that Mahatseva Dwaram, how's it go? Mahatseva Dwaram Apur Vimukte, Tamo Dwaram Yoshita Sanghi Sangam. So it says that if you're attached to association with materialistic people, or if you're attached to the opposite sex for sense gratification, or even you have friendships with people who are attached to the opposite sex for sense gratification, then that opens the door to hell, the tamo dvaram. But the same attachment, when directed towards devotees of the Lord, opens the door to liberation. Mahatseva dvaram ahur vimukte. So because Devahuti was a devotee and Kardama Muni was a devotee, then their attachment for each other was not degrading, even though they were very affectionate, as you're going to see in the upcoming verses. They were very, very affectionate towards each other. So often we see in ISKCON that sometimes Grihastha couples will be externally detached but internally attached, and it causes a lot of problems, right? Because externally they can be cold towards each other, thinking that we shouldn't be attached. And so they try to not be attached, even though internally they're attached. And so because the affection doesn't express itself in natural, healthy ways, then it expresses itself in unhealthy ways. And that causes problems in relationships. So Kardama Muni and Devahuti are setting a good example about how to be attached in a healthy Krishna conscious way. In a way that although they're attached and they exhibit their affection for each other very forthcomingly, but they don't lose their glory. They don't lose their Krishna consciousness, because internally their attachment is for Krishna. And we'll see that in the end, as Kardama Muni, after all these years of enjoyment, after having many children, he just walks away from it all. And Devahuti, her main concern is not that he's leaving, but that she needs to be protected. And so when she has a son, her lamentation at the end is not that he's going, but that he's going without teaching her the science of bhakti. You're a great soul, you're a transcendentalist, you're a liberated personality, and you're going, you never gave your opulences to me. You never imparted to me your pure devotional service, the science of pure devotional service. That was her lamentation. So then he said, don't worry, I'm giving you a son who's the Supreme Personality of God. He's going to tell you everything you need to know, which he did. So this is very beautiful. And so Maitreya Muni is narrating this pastime, and he's using this very poetic language, which is invoking imagery, right? We can see it in our minds, just like we see the moon in the sky surrounded by stars, and it's very beautiful, right? Sometimes you're walking down the road at night, or you're walking, you know, to the temple for Mangalarti, and you happen to look up in the sky, and you're like, wow, the full moon, and you just stop, right? It's like, so every time, we've seen the full moon a zillion times in our lifetimes, but every time we see it, it's like so stunning that you just have to stop and just look at it, right? The moon, wow, amazing. And especially if the moon, it's a full moon and it's surrounded by stars, and the moon is effulgent, it has, you know, itself is, you know, bright amidst the backdrop of the black sky, and then it has a radiance around it that sometimes makes like rainbow colors and makes that part of the sky kind of like a bluish black, like a Krishna blue around the moon, and it's very beautiful. So this is what Kardama Muni and Devahuti look like surrounded by the Gandharva girls as described here. And so Devahuti and Kardama Muni are standing together and their effulgence is combining. So the reason they're looking like a moon is because they're so effulgent. They're radiant. And why are they so effulgent is because they are completely aligned with the purpose of the Lord. If we look at Kardama Muni's life, we can see that practically everything about his entering Grihastha Ashram is totally aligned with the will of the Lord. First of all, before he even gets married, he performs 10,000 years of completely absorbed meditation on the Lord. He performs this tapo divyam, this divine austerity. And we know that it was very devotional because the Lord was very pleased, very satisfied with his meditation to the extent that he appeared to him and expressed his pleasure. I'm so satisfied with you, with your absorption. After all, that's Krishna's instruction, right? Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosi me. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, do everything to me, offer your homage to me. So Kardama Muni was doing that, completely absorbed, manmana bhava madbhakto, and the Lord appeared to him and reciprocated by fulfilling his desire. I know you have this desire. It's a natural desire. In fact, from within your heart, I inspired you with this desire because it's the beginning of Satya Yuga, and we need children. We need to populate this universe, right? It was a big problem at the beginning of the creation that people didn't want to have children, and Brahma was very frustrated with the situation. So the Lord is happy that Kardama Muni is willing to marry and willing to have children and to fulfill the Lord's plan for this universe. So he says, and in fact, the Lord arranges his marriage. He personally arranges his marriage. He's like, don't worry, I've found the perfect girl for you, and she's coming. Her parents are going to be bringing here the day after tomorrow, and you just receive her, and it'll all be good. And he assured him that you'll be protected in your grihastha ashram. By my empowerment, you'll be able to fulfill all of your duties perfectly, and I myself will appear as your son. And at the end, you will come back to me. So it couldn't be more perfect, right? Kardama Muni, his Krishna consciousness, his entering Grihastha Ashram, the term of his Grihastha Ashram, the culmination, his departure from Grihastha Ashram, everything is just like impeccable. So this is a very good preface, and this verse is important to understand in the context as a prelude to what's happening next. Because what appears to happen next is that Kardama Muni and Devahuti are going to be engaged in so much sense gratification. Right, they're going to all the different planets of the demigods, heavenly gardens, where demigods frolic and enjoy each other, and they're going to be enjoying each other's company very much. And to us, it may look like Maya. And in fact, if it was us, it probably would be Maya. But it's not us. It's Kardama Muni and Devahuti. And so what Maitreya Rishi is telling us in this verse is that this couple is not ordinary. Because even though they seem to be very attached to each other, Kardama Muni has complete mastery over his self. So that's how Prabhupada explains. What does it mean to not lose his glory? What does it mean to be alupta mahima? Is that he has complete mastery over his self. He doesn't lose his self-control. So that's another aspect of why he's very effulgent. So we have to be careful to not judge devotees based on what seems to be the case, right? It says they're seemingly attached. And sometimes we see devotees, they're dressed a certain way, their, you know, hair's a certain way, or, you know, they're doing certain activities, and it seems to be the case that they're not in very good consciousness, that they're, you know, fallen or whatever. But we have to be very careful because it's going to seem to be the case that Kardama Muni and Devahuti are just completely lost in sense gratification, but it's not. And there's a very beautiful pastime that exhibits this, which is when Gadadhar Pandit went to meet Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Right? So he went to see him. Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he was lying in this very opulent bed, you know, with silk sheets and pillows bolstering him up. And he had beautiful women on each side fanning him with chamaras and peacock feather fans. And he's all decked out with gold and jewelry, and his hair is freshly oiled and, you know, falling over his shoulders very beautifully, and his teeth are red because he's chewing pan, and he's got this golden spittoon next to him that he's spitting into, and it looks like he's, you know, just a sense enjoyer. So when Gadadhar looks at him and sees him in this, you know, this scene, he's thinking, what is this? Why would you want to bring me here to visit this sense of joy? He didn't say it, but he's thinking in his mind. And then, so who was it that brought him there? Ramananda Roy? Anyways, one of, Mukunda. Okay, so Mukunda could understand. He could see by the expression on Gadadhar's face that he was having these, you know, somewhat negatively judgmental thoughts. And so then he recited some verses from Srimad Bhagavatam. I think he recited the verse from the third canto, Aho Bakiyam Kalastana Kutam. Yeah. And then, so just reciting the verses about the glories of Krishna, then Pundarik Vidyanidhi just like went into total ecstasy, and he just jumped up and started dancing and started waving his arms in the air, and his eyes were rolling, and he started smashing things, his beautiful crystal vase of flowers and his glass there. Everything was just going on the floor and breaking. It was like devastation. Right? One of the ecstatic symptoms is devastation. And so when Gadadhar Pandit saw this, he's just like, oh no, I committed a grave offense to this amazing ecstatic Vaishnava. And he paid his obeisances very sincerely, and he surrendered himself as his disciple. So the moral of the story is that we can't judge a book by its cover. So when we hear about Kardamamuni and Devahuti, we shouldn't think, oh, just see how they got absorbed in sense gratification here. So Kardamamuni is standing there effulgent like a moon in the company of his wife. And it's described that pure devotees are like moons. There's a very beautiful verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's from Adi Lila, chapter 13, text 5, that goes, Jaya, Jaya Shri Chaitanya Chandrara Bhakta Chandra Gana. So, all glories to Shri Chaitanya Chandrara. All glories to Lord Chaitanya, who's like a moon, who's the chief moon, Chaitanya Chandrara. Lord Chaitanya is the chief moon, and Bhakta Chandra Gana. His devotees are many other moons. And then Sabara Preme, Jyotsnaya Ujvala Tribhuvana. So Sabara means all together. So Lord Chaitanya, the chief moon, combined with all of the other moons of his devotees, together what happens? Prema Jyotsnaya, the light, right? The jyoti of prema, the light of love of God, does what? Ujvala Tribhuvana. It brightens the three worlds. So in the purport to that verse, Srila Prabhupada talks about how Krishna is like the sun. Right? There's another verse from C.C. Krishna, Surya Sama Maya Haya Andakar, Yahan Krishna Taha Nahi Maya Adhikar. Krishna is like the sun and Maya is like darkness, and wherever the sun is, there can be no darkness. So wherever Krishna is, there can be no darkness. And he says that the devotees are like moons in that they reflect the light of the sun. And so here we are in the darkness of Kali Yuga. It's the darkest of ages. And the son of Krishna has departed to his own abode, accompanied by knowledge, religion, and so forth. And so within in the darkness of night, we need a moon. We need many moons to reflect the light of Krishna. So I want to ask you, what does it mean to be a moon-like devotee? What are the qualities of the devotee that resemble the qualities of the moon? Is there a mic we can pass through? Yes, Karnapur has got it. Sadev, you want to be the delivery boy with the mic?
Surrender to Guru with faith and service.
Surrender to Guru and faith. So how is that moon-like? What qualities of the moon does that resemble?
Oh, you become bright and brilliant by the mercy of the Guru, by surrendering.
Okay, so the mercy of Guru is something bright, and when that reflects off us through our surrender, then we become bright also.
Very brilliant.
Very brilliant. Okay, thank you. Something else? Ragatmika's got... Oh, go ahead, Prabhu.
That we don't invent anything. We just repeat what we've heard. Reflecting what we've heard.
Okay, good. So Prabhupada said that if I have any credit in this connection, presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is, it's that I didn't change anything, right? So the moon, it doesn't change the light, it just reflects it back. Good.
A moon-like devotee is compassionate because in that compassionate mood, he can cool the fire of material existence to another soul that's suffering from that fire.
Yeah, very good. So people are burning the forest fire of material existence, and although the light of the sun is hot, but the Srila Prabhupada tells us that the light of the moon is soothing, it's cooling. And so a moon-like devotee is able to soothe the suffering, to give relief to the suffering of conditioned souls in this world. Yes?
Yeah. Compared with the spiritual master, he's a presence is for the eternity, giving his mercy and protection to the disciple, to the body for the eternity.
Okay, how is that like a moon? How is that? How does that resemble the moon?
Yeah, because the moon is always there.
The moon is always there.
It's always there in the sky, shining, okay. And you know, no matter what, you know, she's always there, reflecting, you know, the light, of course, from the sun.
Yeah.
But she's never missing. You know, she never go. Oh, I'm going to go have a break today.
No, right.
She's always there.
The moon is always there fixed in the sky. Yeah, so our gurus, you're saying, so our gurus are always there for us, right? They're always there to give us shelter and protection. Yes. That's interesting because even though sometimes we see the moon, sometimes we don't see the moon, but the moon is there. So sometimes we are can be with our gurus, sometimes we're in separation from our gurus, but guru's mercy is always there.
Well, it's also explained that the devotee is like the moon because the moon will throw its light even in a sinful person's courtyard or a somebody who's crooked or sinful, and he doesn't discriminate. He shines there also.
Yeah, so not discriminating. Good, that's a good moonlight quality of devotees. Okay, so anyone. Anyone and everyone gets the mercy. Good.
I was thinking effulgent with enthusiasm.
So devotees are effulgent, yeah, like the moon. And that effulgence lights, like the moon lights up the path, right? If you've ever been, if you've ever done nighttime Govardhan Parikram, right? So it's amazing, it's so beautiful, right? After the sun goes down, it starts to get cool, and then the moon comes up, and then you're walking, and everything is dark all around, but the moon reflects off that, because the path around Govardhan is like a light-colored sand, and it reflects the moonlight, and you see this beautiful, like, kind of like glowing ribbon of path, and you know where to walk. So like that, devotees illuminate the path forward for souls in this world. We illuminate the bhakti marg, or the path of bhakti for others. Anything else? Okay, thank you. Yeah, lots of good responses there. Also, sometimes the moon is associated with the mind, right? So the moon, there's a verse in which the moon is compared to the mind or the intelligence. So when the mind is pure and steady and fixed on Krishna, then it's like the moon in the sky, very bright, very peaceful. The mind becomes peaceful. And we can soothe ourselves with our own mind and intelligence when it's fixed on Krishna, and also soothe others. And then something that's particularly mentioned in this verse is that it says that Kardama Muni and Devahuti shone as charmingly as the moon in the sky, which causes rows of lilies to open in ponds at night. So, yeah, the Sanskrit is Kumut Gana Utkacha. So Kumut means, it's translated here as lilies, but Kumuda also means the night lotus. And Gana means rose or bunches. So there are flowers that are night blooming only. And what induces them to bloom is the light of the moon. So when in the presence of a moon-like devotee, then what blooms is our dormant bhakti, right? Because bhakti is inherent in the heart of everyone. Nitya Siddha, what is it? Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhu Kabunai Shravanadi Shuddha Chitta Kare Udai. So pure love for Krishna is inherent within the heart of all jivas, and it's awakened by the processes of bhakti, beginning with Shravanam. So in the presence of a pure devotee, then that bhakti, which is within us, blooms, just like the night-blooming lotus flower. And does this remind you of any other verse, very famous verse, composed by Lord Chaitanya, one of the eight? Yeah, good. What does that mean?
It's like glories to Sri Krishna Sankirtan because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon, which causes the white lotus of good fortune to blossom.
Good, yeah. So the Sankirtan movement is compared to this moon, right, which opens the lotus of good fortune. So these two different meanings of the lotus that's opening, what's opening. So on the one hand, according to Shikshastakam, what is opening is Shreya, is our good fortune. So not just good luck in this material world that you win the lottery, that would be Preya, right? But Shreyas means ultimate good, the ultimate good that we understand our purpose in life, that we're able to connect to Krishna, that we're able to realize ourselves and realize the goal and awaken our love for Krishna. So that's the ultimate good fortune that arises when we come in contact with the moon-like Sankirtan movement or the moon-like Sankirtan devotees. Our good fortune opens and our love for Krishna awakens. So we need devotees to be like moons. And this is, so as Mother Mukhi was mentioning, that several of us are here for the spiritual leadership course. And so the idea is that we really need to be moons. Srila Prabhupada was a great moon, and surrounded by his disciples, he also appeared like the moon surrounded by stars. But he didn't just want his disciples and his followers, his disciples and grand disciples and great-grand disciples, to remain stars. He wanted them to also rise in the sky and become bright moons to illuminate the path of bhakti for everyone, to give mercy, to give shelter, to give care and affection, which is to reflect all that which is coming from Krishna. So transcendental knowledge comes from Krishna, and devotees pass on that transcendental knowledge. Krishna is the sun, and they're the moon, which reflects that knowledge and conveys it to others. The holy name is Krishna, and devotees pass it on and become like the moon, reflecting the light of the sun to others. And empowerment comes from Krishna. Krishna is the source of all power, and yet devotees who are like moons can empower through their encouragement, through their blessings, through their mercy, through their well wishes, through their instructions. They can empower others to do wonderful things in Krishna's service. Love comes from Krishna, but moon-like devotees can also reflect that love, can pass that affection in the form of affectionate care, pastoral care, and mentorship and guidance for other devotees. And Krishna is the supreme shelter, right? Krishna ekasharanam. But devotees who are moon-like can also provide shelter to souls in this world. So in this way, we need to take all of these things from Krishna, receive, right? Krishna consciousness is all about receiving and then passing it on. And that's what it means to be a moon-like devotee, to take the light of the sun and pass it on to others. And that's what it means to be a guru or a spiritual leader, is to take all of these wonderful things, all these wonderful qualities that are, and gifts, treasures that are coming from Krishna, and pass them on. And the Lord wants us to do this. He actually needs us to do this in this world, because there are so many souls that they're suffering, and Kali Yuga is getting darker and darker, and the path of bhakti is becoming increasingly obscured. People are getting so distracted. And so we need to be focused on Krishna and imbibe the light of the sun of Krishna and provide that light for others, provide that shelter for others. So Lord Chaitanya said, Amara Agyaya Guru Haya Tara Edesh. On my order, become guru and liberate this land. So he wanted all of us, and Srila Prabhupada also, he wanted all of us. He said, I want that all of my sons and daughters inherit this title of Bhaktivedanta and become gurus and initiate disciples. So it wasn't that only a few, it wasn't that there was some, you know, chosen ones or something like that, but he wanted everyone, all of his sons and daughters. And so what does becoming a guru entail? Lord Chaitanya says in that same verse, Yare Deka Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh. That just whoever you meet, wherever you go, speak to them about Krishna. Instruct them in the science of bhakti and the science of Krishna consciousness. So pure devotees are not just moons, but they're also moon makers. Right? So we should become moons, and we should also become moon makers. So I remember when I was a new devotee at Soho, I joined at London, in London at Soho Street Temple, and within a week after joining, I became a full-time book distributor. So every morning they would announce the Sankirtan scores, who the name of the devotee and who distributed, you know, how many books, whatever. And so whenever there was a new devotee, the temple president would say, and Bhaktin such and such, or Bhakti such and such, is a bright shining star on the horizon, distributed this many books and collected this much Lakshmi. So it was nice, you know, it was nice to be considered a bright shining star on the horizon. But then he would say that, and all of these stars are going to rise, and they're going to become beautiful moons that are going to shed light in the darkness of this world. So, So we need to become those moons. And we see that Prabhupada was a great moon, brilliant, effulgent moon, surrounded by his disciples. And by his empowerment, by his mercy, by his instruction, So many of those disciples themselves became moons, and today are surrounded by their own stars in the forms of their disciples. And then their disciples, those stars, are going to grow in Krishna consciousness and advance and be empowered and become moons, and they will be surrounded by stars in the form of their disciples, and so on. And so this is the disciplic succession. This is the principle of parampara, that we have a succession of moons, and it keeps going, generation after generation. His Holiness Giriraj Swami wrote a book called Many Moons. So we don't want to stay stars. So everybody should think, I need to become a moon. How can I become that moon-like devotee? How can I become fixed like the moon in the sky? How can I imbibe the mercy and pass it on? How can I absorb and realize the knowledge and pass it on? How can I take complete shelter of the Lord, completely surrender myself at the lotus feet of the Lord and pass that on? How can I fully receive the love and affection that the Lord is giving me and pass that on in the purest, most powerful possible way? So I'll end there, and we'll open it up for any questions or comments.
Whatever great man does come and follow, and Krishna comes to reestablish religious principles, he wants to do everything in such a way that people don't like deviate from the path. And even when Chitraketu was kind of making fun of Lord Shiva with Parvati instructing so many in that way. So we're not supposed to judge a pure devotee and or Krishna and or, you know, saintly persons. But it's like, what type of mentality should we have when we see that like someone is maybe doing something that out of the normal, and we don't want to be, you know, presumptuous to think that, well, maybe, you know, they shouldn't be doing that. But you know, what kind of mentality should we keep? Just set it aside, or what do you think?
Just talk to them about it. Talk to them about it. Oh. Right? If the devotee's doing something that you're like, what the heck? You know, just go up to them. Oh, Prabhu, I observed you. I noticed you doing this or saying this, and I'm just curious, like, what's going on? Right? Just talk to them about it. Oh, well, I thought you were talking about like a devotee that you see.
I mean, as you said, as the chapter goes on, I got to give a class sometime. I'm hoping I don't have to give that class. Anyway, it gets a little bit, as you said, right now he's maintaining his glory and everything looks very first class. But as the description goes on, the mind can think, well, gee, that's pretty, how he's renounced with so much going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very interesting. And we have to remember this was back in Satya Yuga, at the beginning of Satya Yuga. So in that age, people were a lot more empowered than we are. So they can actually do those things without being entangled by it, without being affected by it, without being dragged down by it. So we can't imitate that kind of behavior, but we can appreciate that Kardava Muni is such a great sage that he can do those things and not be degraded.
Hare Krishna. It reminded me of the bhajan Nitaya Pada Kamala Koti Chandra Sushitala.
Yeah, good.
But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that moon is the cause of the rasa in fruits and vegetables. So, like raso vaisaha, raso mhi eva anandi labdhi. The soul will be satisfied only when it tastes the bhakti rasa.
Good,
unless, yeah. Until it tastes it, like we talk about, we have a higher taste also. But unless we taste the bhakti ras, the soul will never be satisfied. So that's what ras is, something which everyone is looking and hanging and hankering for.
Yeah, very beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, so that's another way that devotees are like moons, that the moon brings the rasa. And devotees bring the bhakti rasa. Right? Because according to Madhurya Kadambari, bhakti can only come from one who has, from the bhakta. Right, we can't get bhakti from any other source.
Bhakti, it has to. Sanjayate. But
exactly.
Moon God has a curse that he won't stay the same every night. So, how do you correlate with that, Kapil Devotee's?
Yeah.
Verse.
How does a devotee like the moon? Because we see that the moon waxes and wanes. So one thing is that in analogies like this, it's not that every similarity has to apply, right? But it is explained that this is in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that as a devotee advances in Krishna consciousness, it's like the waxing moon, right? That they become small and they become effulgent like the full moon. But if they commit an offense, only if they commit an offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, then they start to wane. And he uses that analogy for as the waning moon. Their glory begins to wane. But if they don't commit an offense, then they can remain like an effulgent full moon. Thank you. Yes, Prabhu?
Yeah, Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are compared to the moon so many places. In the Nectar Devotion, I think it's Krishna is compared to 24 and a half moons.
Yeah.
You know, he has like his toenails, his fingernails, his cheeks, his forehead and things.
His forehead is the half.
Half moon, yeah. And interesting one pastime when Krishna is being glorified as the moon, Radharani gets a little angry and says that, oh, you're only compared to the moon because you're attached to Chandravali, which means the moon.
Yeah, any reference to the moon in Radhakrishna Leela, Radharani doesn't like.
When Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was meditating on Gayatri, he wasn't able to count all the moons, and then he prayed to him, Radharani, you know, taught him and revealed the ultimate knowledge.
Yeah, thank you.
Hare Krishna. I know that these are exalted personalities, but still, the example of the father not being there to raise the son, what can be said of that?
Well, he knew that the son was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so it's kind of an exceptional situation.
The burden on the mother still.
I mean, it was the son who cared for the mother in that sense, in that relationship. It's kind of exceptional relationship, right, where your son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he's instructing you, and usually it's the other way around, right? The mother is the guru of the child, but in this case, the son was the guru of the mother.
So no father in these days can say, oh, I'm following Gautama Muni's.
What's that? Well,
so no father today can use this as an excuse.
Right, unless he can guarantee that the son that he left his wife with is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he can't just be irresponsible and leave.
Thank you.
Wasn't it even the nine daughters were, didn't they take birth almost as adults? I mean
yeah.
It was so immediate.
Yeah.
To speak of the personality of Godhead.
Right.
But immediately, it's not a question of raising him.
Yeah.
He's already complete.
Good point. He's
complete, but.
Yeah, it's described like that, that the daughters, they immediately immediately grew to maturity. So this is in every way a very exceptional situation, right? So don't try this at home.
Thank you for class, Prabhu. I was thinking about the verse from Nectar of Instruction, Chastaya Svabhava Danitarva Pushasta Dosha Naprakatatvam Iha Bhakta Janasya Pashyat, that, and also like the moon, this is another comparison we could take, is that devotees may appear to have these kinds of material blemishes and considerations, like the moon appears to have
spots,
but it's still very, they're still very beautiful, they're still transcendental.
Yeah.
At the same time though, we do have to make considerations about who we're associating with, and some of us may have even experienced a devotee who you can kind of track their, I guess, like eventually a devotee leaves or gives up the practice, and they might even be senior to you, and you can kind of see their, you can see the path and how they went in that direction, like you could trace it out, but it's hard to, you know, they're senior to you, and you're trying to be humble, and you don't want to say anything. And I know you said earlier to Prabhu's question, just to talk to a devotee about it, but yeah, I just wonder if you could shed more light about this, how we associate with devotees, even though considering we want to respect them all and see them all as transcendental, but then some of them, there are also levels to it, and yeah, how do we discern?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's best to keep a respectful distance, you know, especially if a devotee is senior to you, or at least was senior to you, but now is kind of like not in a good consciousness, and you're sure that they're not in good consciousness, then, you know, it's not like you're going to instruct that devotee and save that devotee, you know, as they'll still see you as a junior devotee, as just a young, new devotee. So in that case, better to just protect yourself by keeping a respectful distance. Sometimes that's required. And you can pray for them. You can talk to senior devotees that may be like, you know, senior god brother or god sister to that person and be like, hey, I'm very concerned. Could you maybe try to help them, try to talk to them, try to bring them back around? Like, I really care about them, but I'm so junior to them. It's not my place, but can you maybe try to help them? Yeah. Pray for them. Offer a Nrsimha Puja on their behalf, right? Just do everything you can to try to help devotees, because it's a great loss. But another thing I want to mention, because you mentioned that thing about the spots on the moon, right? The pockmarks on the moon. So in the purport to Bhagavad Gita 9:30, Srila Prabhupada says that even though there are spots on the moon, but it does not impede the diffusion of moonlight. So, I was saying that we need to be moons. We need to take positions of spiritual leadership and be gurus, be mentors, be spiritual teachers and guides for others. And you might think, oh, I'm not qualified because, you know, okay, other people see me as a good devotee, but I know myself better. You know I have this weakness. I have these thoughts from time to time. I still have some desires. You know, sometimes I still get angry. Sometimes I still am like have a me-first attitude when it comes to prasadam or something, you know, and it's not really what it should be. So we might think, oh, I'm not qualified. So that the moon example is good because it means that we don't have to be perfect, right? We don't have to be perfect. We just need to be sincere, and we just need to be surrendered to Krishna. We need to just keep ourselves in the light, in a position where we're able to reflect the light of the sun and pass on that light in the form of knowledge and mercy and shelter love and empowerment. And that's possible. The imperfections that we see in ourselves, they don't impede the diffusion of moonlight. So we can have confidence that Krishna is going to protect. I was just reading a verse. I'm trying to remember what it was. I have a bad memory these days. But it was saying that if you take this position, gosh, maybe someone can help me. If you take this position, Krishna's saying, if you take this position, then I will protect you. I won't let you fall down. I was just reading this in Chaitanya Charitamrita last night in my CC class. Anyways, I can't remember the verse, but it reminded me of another verse that from 11th canto that said that those who are on this path, even if they're running with their eyes closed, they're not going to trip and fall. So, you know, as long as we keep ourselves, as long as we're sincere and surrendered and praying to Krishna, constantly taking shelter of Krishna with full humility, then Krishna will protect, even if we're missing something, even if our knowledge is not complete, even if our if we don't. That's what the acharyas in commenting on that verse from 11th canto. They say that the eyes closed, running with eyes closed, means that our jnana is not complete. We don't have complete jnana. So you may not have complete knowledge of the scriptures. You may not know a lot of Sanskrit shlokas. You may not have read like all the Upanishads or whatever. But if you're surrendered to Krishna and you have the understanding that there's nothing else to do in this world except serve Krishna, and that you're willing to do that, then that's, and do that constantly, right? Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upiyanti te. Krishna says that those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I'll give them the intelligence, I'll give them the buddhi, I'll give them the gyan, I'll give them the empowerment, I'll give them everything that they need. Krishna is fully going to equip us to do the service because he wants to. Lord Chaitanya is saying, amaragya, that on my order, do this. So if the Lord is personally, the Lord is most munificent, most merciful form is telling us to do something, then of course he's going to give us the mercy and the empowerment to do it. Of course he is. Of course he's going to protect us, right? Avashya Rakshibe Krishna, Bhakti Rasamitu, that of course he's going to protect his devotees. Avashya means obviously, like certainly, Krishna is going to protect his devotees. He says, you know, Pratijani, what is it? Name Bhakta Pranashiti, that declare it boldly, my devotee will never perish. So as long as we stay surrendered. The point is that the problem arises is when we make offenses, when we become proud of the position. We think, oh, I'm better than others. I'm great. I deserve to be worshipped. Everyone should serve me. And when people don't, then we, think badly towards them, treat them badly. Or that's when we start becoming like a waning moon, right? And it leads to spiritual fall down. But otherwise, Krishna will protect. We don't have to be afraid. Yes.
Krishna, can I say something to the devotee?
Yes.
Yeah, the first thing that you need to do is not judge. Yeah, and you have to be completely surrendered to Krishna, that everything he does is good. So remove that judgment, and you just surrender completely to Krishna. That even that you see something is going on, Krishna already has the plan. But if you feel affected, you should move to a place that you feel safe, but don't interfere, don't judge. You just, you have to be 100% sure Krishna is inside your heart, and you have to, look at your guru, at your the people, the devotee who inspire you, and forget about this person that is disturbing you. I will offer one Nishina prayer, that's it, and then forget that exists. And let Krishna, he has his plan. Maybe he want, have some lila over there. You don't know. So don't judge. And be safe.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes it looks like devotees in a... Krishna's control. So sometimes it looks like devotees going through a reversal, right, in their Krishna consciousness. But it's like that may be required to go forward. It's just like you pull into your driveway, and then next morning you need to go to work. It's like, what do you have to do first? You need to reverse. You need to back up out of the driveway so that you can go forward. So sometimes in order for a devotee to take the next step, they need to go back. Something needs to get worked on in such a way. And it looks like, it may look like a fall down or a fall, whatever, but it's Krishna's got it covered. We don't need to judge or...
Hare Krishna. Lastly, I want to acknowledge my gratitude for teaching me the ISKCON Disciple course.
Oh. I taught you the ISKCON Disciples course? Where?
Hare Krishna. Toronto.
Oh, in Toronto. Okay, good.
And you spoke a lot and gave very good insights your entire this class, it reminded me that you covered everything perfectly. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. So we'll end there. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samabeda Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol.